We're going to put our thumb about on the year 500, if you can gauge it down there. Can you find 500 and just run it on down there? And notice how many other cultures are running concurrently with the Maya at that time. You have something going on down in southern Mexico, and I'll show you where that is. This is where Oaxaca is, and there's a thriving culture existing down in here. Then you should find that the Toltec up there. You should find El Tajín, and you should find Teotihuacan. So at that time, this culture up here was flourishing. A culture down here was flourishing. A culture over here was flourishing. And up here, we also have a culture flourishing. So this whole Maya area is flourishing at the same time these other cultures are flourishing. Now, along about the year 900. Around about 900 in there, they all began to decline just a little bit. Something very strange happened up in here where the Toltec were. There were two warring factions up there. The Toltec people, and you find their bar there, were the Chichimecas who came down from the barbarian groups here, and they swung in here and they managed to displace the people that were in here, which were the Teotihuacanos. And then they got into a fuss with one another, the Toltec did. Their leader was a man named Topiltzin, and he was kind of a pacifist. He didn't believe in sacrificing anything but butterflies, snakes, and birds. And the opposing faction there, which were the converts to the warring, the warrior group called the followers of Tezcatlipoca, they believed in sacrificing human beings. And so eventually they ran Topiltzin off. And he took his group, and this happened about 987. In the meantime, he had taken the name Quetzalcoatl and attached it to his own. So he's now called Topiltzin Quetzalcoatl. And that just mixed things up for everybody that was really interested in the history of the Maya, because you heard about Quetzalcoatl, and he was supposed to be a god, right? Well, this was Topiltzin, who came along here, and he went up here, and he arrived in the area up here, Yucatan, about 987. And that was the beginning of the acculturation of the Maya people who lived here with the Mexican group that came along here. So he came in here, and he and his people affected what was going on at Uxmal and also what was going on at Chichen Itza. People call that Chichen Itza. You see it over there? No, you don't, because it didn't give you a map. You need to look at this map. Now you got your time thing. Well, that's all right. You've got to be fair here. If you look at your northern area there and go up in the circles, and there's a little cluster of things there that includes Uxmal. It's right in this spot right here. Those are the Puuc cities. They're in the Puuc Hills. And they sort of have the same style of living. Now, if you go over to the right, you'll find Chichen Itza. Uxmal and Chichen Itza were the big boys of the flourishing of the Yucatan Maya. Now if you go up to the top there, you'll find Zibixaltun, very crazy spelled word, D-Z. Do you find it up there? D-Z-B-I-L-C-H-A-L. Its history goes back to 800 B.C. But it also declined before these others did. So you have Uxmal and Chichen Itza, which have been really infiltrated by the Toltec. And the funny thing happened, you see, the Toltec intended to evangelize or to conquer these people by might. And what happened was, they just melded together and kind of became a hybrid culture. Because the Toltec picked up the things from the Maya, and the Maya picked up the things from the Toltec. The other thing that happened was that Palenque down here, which was floundering at this time, their people just kind of drifted north. And from these other cities in the central area, the people just kind of drifted over a 200-year period. They abandoned their own cities, and the theory is that some of them arrived up here and became part of the thriving Yucatan cultures. So you have a little bit different time frame here. Uxmal's beginnings came in 400, but they didn't really flower until 700 through 900. Topiltzin came about 987, so it wasn't true Maya anymore. It became a hybrid Maya Toltec, and then they kept on until 1100. Actually, they were still a functioning society when the Spanish got there. I'd like to read to you from this book right here, which was written by Bishop Landa in 1566. And this is the translation of what he wrote about the area. This is a limestone shelf, and there are no wells. This shelf of limestone has aquifers under it, you see, which sometimes fall in and expose an open well, which they call the cenote. You probably heard about the ones at Chichen Itza. The cenote that they threw people in as a means of sacrifice. But they used them for water. Now, when you got up as far as Uxmal, there weren't any cenotes. They had to catch rainwater. Chichen Itza, over a little bit farther, had cenotes, but Uxmal did not. And this is what Bishop Landa, who was actually an oppressor of the Indian people that wouldn't agree to become Christian. He said, when I was living there in a building we were demolishing, oops, I'm in the wrong place. I want to read to you about the land. Yucatan is a land of less soil than any I know, being all live flat stones with very little earth, so that there are few places where one can dig down a fathom without meeting great chunks of hard rocks. The stone is not very good for fine carving. It is hard and coarse. But such as it is, it has served to produce a great number of buildings in this country. The country is excellent for lime, of which there is much. It is a marvel how much fertility exists in the soil, on or between the stones, where is to be found all there is, more among the stones than there is elsewhere, since on the earthly ground, where it is to be found, no trees grow, but only grass. But where they sow over the stony parts, they secure crops. And all the trees grow, some of them marvelously large and beautiful. The cause, I think, is that more moisture is preserved among the stones than in the earth. In this country, there has been, so far, found no kind of local metal. It is astonishing that without it, they have erected so many buildings, since the Indians can tell nothing as to what tools were used. Now, of course, you have to realize that the Indians he's dealing with are the tail end of the culture. The culture has declined, and these people are not they don't have the know-how and the sophistication in art and in architecture that the people had during the times of the flourishing of the culture. So he's dealing with a much less accomplished group of Maya than lived there during those years from 400 to 900, and still he's impressed. But since they lack metals, God gave them a flint ridge near where the Sierra we first spoke of crosses the country. And of this they made points for war spears, and also the knives used in sacrifice, of which the priests have a great many. They also serve and still do as arrow tips, thus taking the place of metal. They had a certain soft brass, which when founded with a light mixture of gold, yielded them hatchets, and the little rattles that they used in their dances, as well as a certain sort of chisels, which they used in making the idols and boring out the blowpipes, as in this figure in the margin, and then he has some pictures of them. This brass and other plaques or sheets of greater hardness is part of their traffic in Tabasco for their idols. They had among them no other kind of metal. And he marveled, as did other people who saw what had been done with what they had been able to do without metal tools. And here Landa is writing about the buildings. There are in Yucatan many edifices of great beauty, this being the most outstanding of all things discovered in the Indies. They are all built of stone, finely ornamented, though there is no metal found in the country for this cutting. These buildings are very close to each other and are temples. The reason for there being so many lying in the frequent changes of the population and the fact that in each town they erected a temple out of the abundance of stone and lime and of certain white earth excellent for buildings. So this man who came along 400 years after the flowering of the culture and even the tail end of the culture is greatly impressed with what is still there. Now, many, many people, actually Uxmal was never lost in the jungle, because when you are in that, have you been to Uxmal?
Yes, I've been there. I went there at night, and the problem with going at night and a sound and light thing is that they show you everything and you discover it yourself. You don't see it as well as when you have to vagabond run around and mix it up yourself, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's nice to see the sound and light show after you've gone over the site itself.
Yes, and that I didn't do, sure. Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to point out to you was the kind of land that Uxmal is on. It's not towering forest. It's low brush. It's thick, and it's encompassing, and it is the kind of growth that gobbles things up, but it's not tall. And of course, when you remember that the soil is so thin, you can understand why it doesn't support anything that's very tall. But it is an area that is very hot. During the rainy season, they get lots of rain. And during the dry season, it's very brushy. I've been there during the rainy season and during the dry season. Were you there in the summer?
No, I was there in September.
Okay, were things green?
Yeah, it wasn't too bad. Uh-huh. It was
because that's the tail
time.
End of the mm-hmm. of the rainy season. In
oh,
September.
I see. I didn't know what it was. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the rainy season during the summer. It starts about in May, and then in the afternoon, every afternoon, clouds roll up, and you know that it's going to pour down pretty soon. And of course, this replenishes their cisterns, because at Uxmal they built what they called shaltuns, which are really cisterns, and they caught rainwater. That's how they got their water.
Did they have calcium so that they would be water tight?
I'm not sure, but they built them of stone.
That was a big problem in Palestine for a while, and then all of a sudden they got it, and that made a lot of difference in their building.
And some of those Pook sites that are there, I don't know whether you can find Sahil on that. Can you find Sahil and Kaaba on that map? And there should be something called Shlapak.
I don't have my glasses on, so don't...
Oh, so it won't do any good, huh? Well, you see, all of those places are in a little Pook center, and they all use rainwater. They used rainwater for their source of water, and they have these sheltoons built on the top of their palaces many times. They were just kind of depressions like this for rainwater. At Sahil, it's right up on the top of the palace, just kind of a level, like, I suppose they just go out and grab some, I don't know. But that was their source of water, was rainwater.
Let me kind of take a look and see what else I wanted to tell you before we look at the side. Well, let's look over here, because I drew the site out here for you. You can get good accommodations at Uxmal. There's a hotel right over this way, and I remember that when I got there, it was in the evening the first time, and you could look out on the balcony and you could see Uxmal, the building stuck up above the grove, and you could see it out there. And here's a highway that comes down. This site is about a half a mile from here to here, and it's a little bit less from here to here. These are brushy trees. This is snaky country, too. There are harmless snakes, and there are also poisonous snakes in here. This is probably one of the most interesting buildings. It's the Pyramid of the Magician, and there's a myth that goes with that, and I'll tell you what that is. This is a group called the Nunnery Quadrangle, and I'm sure that the Maya would roll over in their grave if they knew that they'd named that the Nunnery Quadrangle. It reminded the first explorers of a cloister because of the way it was built. It's four buildings, and the ends are open here, and there's a plaza in the middle there. There's an unrestored ball court right in the middle here. And this is a very imposing building. This building right here is about one football field long. So you can kind of get an idea of how big this quadrangle is. Then you come down here, and this is about two football fields from here to here, about 600 feet. And this particular edifice is on three different terraces. And you can see it. This is where we're going to come walking down through here. And we'll come along here, and you'll be able to see these terraces. This big one is 600 feet by 400 feet by 50 feet high. And the next one just snudges in a little bit. And then the final one is only 30 inches higher than the other, but you got three terraces here. And here is this huge building, and it's one football field long. That's an easy way to visualize how big it is, you know. It's
is
a little
that
bit more
where the sound and light is at that building?
Well, we're going to be right up here for sound and light.
Well, that's where the sound and light
is.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You sat right on this top step, and a lot of the things that they showed you took place in the Pyramid of the Magician.
Thank you.
But this thing is, I'm sure when you see the slide, you'll recognize that you have seen that someplace before, this edifice here. Then these kind of all seem hooked together. Here's their great pyramid, but you can walk right off this top terrace, right off part way up the great pyramid. And it's tall. It's about 90 feet tall from the base up. It's about the same height as this one right here. This is just a ruined area, but if they ever get around to reconstructing this, it's going to be more imposing even than this one. It goes back farther, and it has many structures in here that all that is left is the foundation. I started to go through here and go up, but the growth was this high and the path was this narrow, and I whistled and made lots of noise, but I could still just imagine that there was a fer de lance in that brush waiting to snap me on the leg, and I was wearing not boots but low, my shoes only came up to here. But this is going to be a place of great beauty if they ever get it done. This is really the major part of it. I did walk over in here to the pyramid of the old woman, but it also is in a great state of disrepair. None of these have had anything done to them except the identification that they are there. Only this part right in here has been restored. Now, many people have, this was never lost. It was never covered with the jungle. It was always visible. And it had many people who were interested in it. Among them, John Lloyd Stephens. And if you're interested in this area at all and can get a hold of his two volumes on incidents of travel in the Yucatan, and the other one is incidents of travel in Chiapas and Central America, he tells about Uxmal. The city of Uxmal, Uxmal was never forgotten, unlike the sites in the Petén and the Usumacinta regions. It had not been abandoned before the arrival of the Spanish, and it is not located in an area prone to devastation by the tropical jungle. Uxmal survived the collapse of Mexican domination, which took place in the 13th century, and endured until the first conquistadores landed in the 16th. Whatever finds may yet emerge from the Yucatec jungle, Uxmal still remains the crowning achievement of Maya builders. The breadth of the vistas, its aura of monumentality, the extraordinary planning of its ceremonial center, and the great quality of its edifices, which combines sobriety with profuse geometric decoration. Everything about Uxmal exerts a special appeal, and the experience of being faced with its grandiose palaces and temples for the first time is indescribable. And he was one of the first people that really scratched away some of the growth to see it, and was very impressed. What you're going to see here is a difference in architecture. You remember in Palenque, everything was kind of fluid and round and beautiful. Also in Tikal, you had that same fluidity of artwork. You're not going to see that here. You're going to see geometric things. A kind of a simplicity of line. And in the line, they have made their design. Do you know what a fret is? A fret in architecture is... It's a what?
No. That was music.
Or to fret, you know, means to fuss around. Yeah. But a fret in architecture, and I found this out the hard way, is simply a straight line of stone. And it's used to combine with other straight lines to create design. And if you have frets that come like this, they
and
call
these are
them
stone and brick, is that
frets.
Right? If I remember correctly,
big pardon?
Like they were stone and brick, is that correct?
They were faced, you see, these buildings, some of them were faced with cut stones and put together without mortar. Mm-hmm. These frets are used in the designs of the facades. The bottom parts of the buildings are going to be plain. They're not going to be in little panels of stucco figures standing there in all their fancy clothes. That's going to be plain. But you're going to see stepped fret designs. And you're going to see mat designs like this. Now, it's interesting. The more you read about it, the less you know. because some interpreters say that this is a representation or symbolic of the power of the nobles. Some people say that this is a stylized serpent because it represents the diamonds on the back of the serpent. So you can take it whatever way you want. You'll also see things like this, which is probably the only curved line you'll see, and that is the undulating serpent. Now you've got Mexican influence, you see, coming in here. But there'll be many stepped fret designs. You'll see chalk masks, which have a snout that comes out like this. The god of rain. The Maya have absorbed some of the gods from the Mexican culture. The Mexicans called it Tlaloc. The Maya called it Chalk. But rain's very important to them. Sun is very important to them. And so they had that as a basis for worship, those things. The other thing you're going to see is very few stelae. Remember all those, were you here for Copan? We saw all those fancy stelae?
Yes, myself.
All over the place? You're going to see one here, just one. And the poor old thing is really so badly eroded that they can't read it. Just one. And you didn't see round columns on buildings in any of those places, did you? But you're going to see round columns here. And sometimes they support a temple. Sometimes they're part of a facade up here at the top. So there's a change in the architecture and a change in the approach to art. It's much more angular, less fluid and soft, which probably is the evidence of the militarism, you see, the brusque changes. So let's look at these things, and you pitch in and ask me whatever you'd like to.
You want me to turn that on?
Hmm?
You want me to turn it on?
Yeah, and we need to get these things so we can see. Okay. Now we understand that we're kind of Maya with the Toltec flavor here. Interesting thing about the Toltec is that they became such a powerful and admired group that all the people that came after them claimed ancestry in the Toltec. The Aztecs said, these are our ancestors. The Mexicanized Maya said, these are our ancestors. Mr. Big, you see, is part of our ancestors. Now first I'm going to take you through the Yucatan countryside, so you have to take my word for it. It's flat as a piece of paper. Well, it is a piece of paper.
Very good description. I just turned it on.
Well, I'll bet you that there's nothing on there, see? Somebody else was using it.
Oh, I see. Excuse
you don't
me.
See why
I didn't even
put something on.
I displayed plans of mice and Mayans.
There we are. See how flat it is? Now, I want you to notice particularly, do you see something there that looks like there's something tied on top of it? Mm-hmm. Okay, that is somebody's path to their home. Mm-hmm. And they mark it like that so they can find it. Mm-hmm. It's that thick. And here are two men coming up the road. And we were driving this particular road. So we don't know whether they turned in there or not. But we asked about it, and that's what it is. They're marking their path. Also, they have people out with machetes maintaining this road. That's the only way they can keep it from creeping over the road. Mm. See, the conditions are such that vegetation just flourishes here during the rainy season. Mm. Now, away up there, as we're going down this road, I see here's a little rise. We're going along the Gulf, and we're leaving Campeche which is one of the states of that area. And we saw this thing, and a group of young men went by in a pickup, and they saw us out there, and they were quite amused, particularly when they saw that we were going to take a photograph of it, because all it is the boundary between Campeche and Yucatan. It's nothing. It's just a concrete whatever. The brushy trees, and once in a while a beautiful rainbow. The other side of the rainbow. So you know that up there, that thing is doing bad things for us, Ralph. It's up in the balcony. Do you know how to get there?
Yeah. Okay.
It's amazing what a little light can do. This is just tangled stuff. It's so thick. And you can imagine that it was very difficult to get through. I put in some slides of Maya homes of the area. This is what they look like, and they are much like the ones that the Maya always use. This was early in the morning, and if you see a kind of a little gray haze there, that's their cooking fire. They get up in the morning, they get their meat, and they cook it partially because it's very hot at midday. And so they had that all taken care of. And this is just a little housing complex. I gathered it was several families there. Very typical house of the area. And the pigs just are roaming right around the house.
That's very good.
Every so often they take the thatch off and they rethatch the houses. The one on the left is roofed just with corrugated iron. On the way to Uxmal, you can take a little detour. And if you take that little detour, you go through the village of Akan Cave. And Akan Cave was a flourishing community with a ceremonial center in the year 400. And this is the pyramid. It was very, very hot, and these people were going about their business. This is a functioning community. The woman in the foreground there is wearing a weevil, which is just a garment that they, it's very loose, it's very cool. I have two of them, I wear them in the summer. People wonder what they are, but that doesn't bother me. They're very comfortable because they're cool. She has a garment underneath her weevil, which just hangs like a big sack. And she's carrying things on her head, which you see in this little village. And you can see that at one time they must have scraped a little bit of it out. And you can see the configuration of the pyramid. And a gentleman saw us climbing around on this thing, because you can just walk around the fence and go on up. And he said, "I want to show you this wall." He was so pleased that we were two women and here we were out interested in his culture. And he took us up and showed us this wall, and I wish my photo of the wall had turned out, but it didn't. Along this wall, there were carvings that dated back to 450 AD, and they have preserved that wall. And it was the pride of Akan Cave. It's getting ready to rain, see? We have arrived at Uxmal, and this is bamboo. It grows along the entrance to the site. And this tells us that we're here, and that's a bird of paradise plant that they have planted behind it. This also is made of cut stones, they told us. We're going on that path that I showed you that comes around from the parking lot around the corner of the Pyramid of the Magician. And what you see ahead of you is the back side of the north structure of the Nunnery Quadrangle. Do you see that map design?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And the chalk rain god masks on the cornices just stacked one on top of the other. Note also that there is vegetation growing on top of the thing. These are all pieces of sculpture that they have not found a location for yet. Wherever you see a circle that's connected to another circle, that's a blood knot. But where you see the circle standing by itself, it stands for death. Like that one up there with an X, and then the circle. So I think probably those will end up in the place called the cemetery group, eventually. We're inside the nunnery quadrangle. On your right, you're looking at the north structure. It's the oldest one. And it's from that platform that's at the end of that stairway that you watched your Sound and Light show. Now, you came in from another place. I don't think you climbed up these steps. I don't remember climbing up.
I don't remember climbing up the steps.
Yeah, but there's another entrance over on the side.
Right.
Now you should see that columns, too. Do you see that there's a kind of a little temple on either side of this broad expanse of steps? And you get up there and you get inside, and there are many rooms in that structure that is at the top. They think that this was all residential because there are so many vaulted rooms, and they're quite light. In many of the other Maya sites that you go into, those things are so small and dark that you wonder how anybody could live in them. Down in front is the only stela that you find at Uxmal. The cornice up there is decorated with those frets and geometric design. And where you see the little thing sticking out, that's a chalk mask piece of the frieze. I think we'll see that closer. You see the one on top of the other? And over here to the left, you see kind of an undulating sign. That's the serpent sign. Up above that, you see some half columns set in there. You see your map designs. Now, up above the left door, you should see a Maya house. You see its doorway? I'm going to point it out to you because this is kind of special. This is the house. Here is its roof. Here is its little roof column. The Maya representation of a Maya house. Here are your chalk masks stacked one on the other. Here you have some interpretations are that this is a serpent, stylized serpent. And here you have the frets making a geometric design. And you can see that those steps are rather steep. This is the stela, impossible to read it. It's just has weathered. Evidently, it had not fallen down. And so the ones that fell face down, the carving was preserved. The left-hand side of this north building, see the curved columns? This is called the Venus Temple. Those are cut stones that are not held together with mortar. They were put together much the way the Inca buildings were put together. They were cut so that there was a groove business and they just held together. We're going around the quadrangle. We're now on the western, looking at the facade of the western building. You should see a serpent coming up there, kind of arcing there, and there's a head emerging from the serpent. Then you see the stacked chalk masks, and you can't really tell it, even when they tell you about it and they're looking at you. But these are people. These are men, little figures of men, and they're tenoned into the building. Here you have another Maya house. Another chalk mask, more stylized serpents coming in here. This is a very, very busy, busy facade, but beautiful to look at.
You said Chak Mask?
Chak, C-H-A-C, Chak. And it is the Maya designation of their rain god.
Thank you.
There you're seeing the building from a distance. This is the same building where you saw the serpent coming up. If you look closely, he's over there on the right. This is a long building with steps that come along there. It's not quite as long as the north building, but it's still long. The north building is 1 football field long. This one is a little bit smaller. Can you see the spacing between the buildings there? This is the east building. It is the one that is has the least longevity. In other words, it's later than the other ones. These things, unless you know what they are, this is a double-headed serpent bar. Serpent head, all the way up. This is a tenoned figure in there. Here you have your chalk masks stacked up, and you have your lattice work. Here are these half columns that are in there. You find them repeated here. You find them repeated here. They appear in this architecture, but not in earlier architecture. On the cornice, at the corner, you see the snout-nosed chalk mask.
It's amazing those have survived so long, those snouts.
Isn't that amazing?
Normally,
or some of them are on the
off.
Ground, you know. These have been restored, and they found them on the ground. It's amazing when you work in an area like I did in Copan, and you pull out these pieces, there's always a site artist. And the site artist says, this I know goes with this, and it's a strange thing. It doesn't look like it to you, but they can show you how the things go together. They have studied lines so much and the period so much that they know what belongs where. So I would guess that part of this was standing pretty well, and some of it was on the ground. This is a very interesting arch. We're now looking south. We're just opposite that big north building. Now you see the Maya houses up there in the facade. And here you see a corbel arch. And right on through that, straight as you go, is the ball court. This is one of those sites that is laid out with north-south, but 17 degrees off to one side again. In the background, you see the two large structures. But you're going to see an interesting thing inside this arch. And I've heard theories about it, but I'd be blessed if I can remember. You're looking at some of those buildings that have not been restored, that are right beyond the ball court. This is the wall, and I want to show you the red hands. Every once in a while, when you're in a Maya site, there'll be a red hand up here. And they have not found out what those stand for. And they're quite plain in here, and the color is quite bright. So if you're ever reading about the Maya and you find out what those red hands are, I'd surely like to know. There's another one right in the center. Can you see it? And it was a brighter red. Right here, the finger sticking out. They told us to look for it, and we asked the woman I was traveling with, we asked the guard what that stood for, and he said, nobody knows. This is the ball court. Nothing has been done to this ball court. You're looking at it just the way it looked when they scratched off the brush. Now, Notice the terracing up there. You see? These are artificial terraces. This big terrace that you see in front, this is the one that's 600 feet by 400 feet. Right here. There is a building at this level. And then here's the next terrace up. And if you were up there, you'd see another terrace on top of it. This is the Great Pyramid that's built right into this terrace. This is really a beautiful sight. The House of the Turtles. The turtle is very important to the Maya culture because it represents water. And over again, you get the motif that carries out the idea of water. Now, do you see your columns there that are in the facade? Mm-hmm. And then the cornice that stands out like this, those turtles are tenoned in and they go all the way around. These are cut stones. There's no mortar in this building at all. When you go inside, there are three rooms that you go into one and then you could go into the other and then beyond. This is probably one of the most beautiful of the buildings simply because of its simplicity. No explanation for that little hole up there under the first level of the tunnel. Nobody knew that. This is the Palace of the Governor. This is its east side with the ceremonial stairway that comes up to it. They tell us that there are, and I don't know who counted them, there are 20,000 pieces of stone mosaic in the facade that goes around this building. This building is 370 feet long, which would make it 70 feet over the length of a football field. And it's separated really into three sections. And you can tell where those indentations go. Those are very, very tall Maya arches. I remember this place particularly because I lost my camera case here. I left it sitting on a rock. This is one of the featured parts of that facade. And you can see the stylized double-headed serpent. See the frets that go around there in that geometric design. You see the map design up above there. And I just didn't quite catch it. Is the undulation of the serpent. And then you see a chalk mask on each side of that center part. A very beautiful feature piece. That's the very, very tall Maya arch. Those are supposed to be the highest corbelled arches in the Maya world. And you sort of see the pattern that goes across the whole thing. I'm down on the path here, and can you see how closely that vegetation covers up the path? If you're at all worried about snakes, it kind of gets to you. Busy but beautiful. Now you can see the undulating serpent following us all the way around in the very top part. The stacked chalk mass coming down, just falling down there. The map design. Mm-hmm. And interspersed in here you'll find another chalk mask and another chalk mask.
I think I was mistaken when I said bricks. It seems to be all stones here.
Beg pardon?
I was mistaken when I said bricks.
No, they're not brick. It's cut stone. Mm-hmm. It's all cut stone. And you have to keep telling yourself, just like Bishop Landa pointed out, that this was all cut with obsidian tools. Mm-hmm. There was no metal. So they were certainly sophisticated in their stone carving. But when you read about it, it tells you that this, I'm going to go back there. The sophistication of these designs indicate that there has been much skill passed down over the ages, because this kind of represents a flowering of stone carving. the Great Pyramid. It's a 9-step pyramid. You can't see all of them from here because several of the steps are down below that terrace. It's only been released, only a part of it has been released from the earthen mound. Now you're looking down from the top of that pyramid. Over on the right, you see the Pyramid of the Magician. And you can see that it's elliptical in shape. There are 5 temples built, one on top of the other, in that particular place. I'm going to have to hurry because we fiddled around at the beginning. You see that the House of the Turtle, looking right in the middle foreground there. And then behind that, the quadrangle, the nunnery quadrangle. And here you have much brush going. Also from the top of the Great Pyramid, you're looking down on the Dovecote area. This, when they get it all scratched out, is going to be more impressive than the nunnery quadrangle. This is the remaining roof cone. If you look closely, you can see structures that are probably foundations. I went through there a little way and got spooked and came back out. And I was a little ashamed of myself, but I did. You can see the path coming in there. This goes around also on the side. And there are ruins on the right side and the left side of this roof cone. It's a beautiful roof cone. See this brushy growth, how it crowds up and keeps encroaching on the structure. You can see just the top of the Great Pyramid sticking up there. Now we're looking at the Pyramid of the Magician. If you look down toward the bottom, you'll see kind of a dark spot to the right. That's a place that you can go in and see what the first temple looked like. Because it's just like one of those Easter eggs, you know, where you put one inside of the other and another one inside of the other. You can go in there and you are in the area where the first temple was. And you can see its walls. And if you go into that other one that's farthest left, you see the second pyramid and what it looked like, built over that first one. And if you go up on top, you can look down through a hole and you can see the roof cones of those pyramids. If you go up the back side, you see the side that isn't so steep, you enter the third temple. If you go up this one, you get into fourth temple, and if you go clear on top, you get to the fifth one. That's the pitch of the steps. This is very high. They had a chain that came down there that you could hang on to go up. And here you have a chalk mask on the banister. Now, I'm ashamed to tell you this, but I got this one in the wrong place. And I couldn't find it ahead of time. You remember the Great Pyramid?
Yes.
When you went in that door, this mask right here let you go into the next room. And you stepped on your snout and then stepped up. This is actually the mask inside the Great Pyramid, which is back there by the palace of the governor. He's in the wrong place. This is the first temple, and these are the original wooden lintels. And this temple was built in 900. So it's 1,000 years old. If you go through here, you're going to see what was the second temple. They just tunneled right on through. It's right under the steps. We've gone to another site, which is also a Pook site called Kaba, which is just down the road a little way. And you can see the side of it is just full of now.